So I'm going to talk about the about key challenges and defending against malicious social bots. This is a position paper. I aim to get our message across, leave you with three messages about what is a malicious social bot, what is the threat, why is it important, and why is it hard to mitigate. This research project is a collaboration between the Larcy Lab and the NITSIS Lab at the University of British Columbia. So, just to give a fast outline about on the talk, first I'm going to motivate the problem, why study security and privacy still in online social networks. Then I'm going to talk about social bots, the benign and the malicious. Then I'm going to give a very quick survey about current techniques used in OS and security to mitigate automated or abusive automation. And finally, present a set of challenges or socio-technical challenges that might be interesting to you. So first, as you all know, social networking sites or online social networks have far exceeded their traditional objective of connecting people together. Today, they're being used by third parties to reach out to millions of active web users. For example, during the 2008 US presidential campaign, President Obama's campaign team used online social networks extensively, and it has been reported that the campaign team raised more than $500 million online by using these networks. Moreover, social networks could be used to mobilize the masses. You have the example of the Arab Spring, which started early last year, where it had a good asset so online social networks were a very good asset where they were being used as a free speech platforms to organize agendas and gathering places. Online social networks contain a lot of social content that expresses people's opinions, and they can be used to predict two kinds of things in the future. The first one is, for example, here, elections. Here you find a comparison between the 2010 UK general elections as predicted by a professional market research called YouGov, and a data mining tool called Tweetminster. And as you can see, Tweetminster was a bit, it actually outperformed the professional market research. And what they did, they extracted basically opinions from public tweets. The second prediction is of markets. This is an interesting research by Ball in Italia, where they showed that you can actually collect these public tweets, then run a sentiment analysis such as Google profile of mood states, which is a six-state vector that tells you how calm, alert, sure, vital, kind, or happy the person who wrote the tweet is. So what they show is that if you try to overlap the calm Z-score index, the index in the red, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average in blue, and show the day-to-day overlap where the calm was lagged by 3 days, then the calm predicts the industrial, the average Dow Jones Industrial Average, with high accuracy, and they report something about like 95%. So, at the same time, you know, the web is getting social by day, and this pervasive integration of the social web is something we have to consider, that it's going to stay. But at the same time, this social experience is not only enjoyable by humans. So let's take a look at bots. Traditionally, this is a very crude definition of a bot. It's just a piece of software that does highly repetitive operations. It can have some AI modules, some planning, and so on, you name it. A social bot is basically this automation software that controls an account in an online social network or a social media account, And what makes it special is that it is able to pass itself off as a human being. And to achieve that, a social bot can either mimic a real user in an online social network, or you can simulate such a user using AI, such as in social robotics. Just to show you that this is something real and it exists in practice, back in 2010, there was a project at Olin College where Zach Colburn and Greg Mata collaborated to develop believable Twitter bots. Now, their objective was to use the classical sense, think, and act paradigm in artificial intelligence to design Twitter bots that collect basically tweets from people, perform some data mining, define some rules, and then act accordingly. And the objective was to make people follow these bots without knowing that they were actually bots. Then after that, in 2012, the Web Ecology Project organized something called the Social Bots Competition, which had the same objectives, but it had many teams that competed on who's gonna have the greatest number of followers. And the objective was to sustain also some kind of conversation between human users and robots. Also, these kind of bots are benign in the sense that they were designed to promote positive impact in online communities by, say, encouraging collaboration or cooperation between human users on humanitarian and civic issues. Just recently, there was an ACM Interactions magazine cover story on social bots that included topics or related topics in economics, human factors, security, and so on. So in our project, we're interested in the security aspect of social bots. How could they be used or misused on a large scale? So we think of a social bot, here we call it malicious, as an automated social engineering tool that is used to infiltrate targeted online communities. By that, it, say, befriends a large number of users, after which the bots could be used to spread misinformation, propaganda, or collect private user data. Now, currently, we're focusing on these two objectives. So the threat model here is the following. We assume a global passive attacker, adversary, who is able, has the capability of running automated social bots on a targeted online social network. Now, to automate the operation of a social bot, you need to exploit a set of vulnerabilities that I'm going to talk about later on. And these are the objectives of the attacker. In the following slide, I will start with how today's OSN security basically fail at detecting or stopping such malicious social bots. Basically, you have two ways to deal with the malicious social bots problem. The first one is to tolerate these social bots, acknowledge that there's going to be some fake accounts controlled by some automation script, and then try to detect these bots or limit their numbers. Another approach is to limit the advantage or the leverage the adversary gains by operating these social bots. So the first approach is to use machine learning techniques, such as adversarial machine learning. And here, when you say adversarial machine learning, it's an automated cycle where you have these classifiers that adapt to the adversary that basically tries to learn information about the classifier itself. So at the beginning, the attacker starts, the system goes into the attack state, where now this is the state you want to avoid as a defender. After initial detection, the defender starts making proper updates to the defense system. And once the response is done, the system goes into the defense state, where you want to, you know, make this phase as long as possible. However, using all of this machine learning-based defense systems, an adversary can use techniques such as adversarial reverse engineering techniques to learn enough information about the used classifiers in order to mount adversarial attacks that circumvent these classification techniques. So this is when the attacker mutates his attack, and then you know, this starts all over again. As you can see, this is basically a two-player game, and the party that has the largest amount of resources will eventually win. Now, there is nothing wrong with using an adversarial machine learning, other than that you are always vulnerable to new attacks that you haven't seen before. If they're dramatically different than the one you have learned so far. Plus, if you are sure that you can get the attackers by the economics of their resources, then this would be effective. However, as you can see, it is also challenging. The second approach is to use graph theoretic defense techniques, where here you find a typical example of a social graph. And most of the techniques that are, you know, use graph theory algorithms, they make the following three assumptions. The first one is that it is assumed that the system is given a known honest node, you know, a non-Sybil node, non-fake node. The second assumption is that it is very difficult for an adversary to establish these social relationships with honest nodes. That is, the number of attack edges between fake or Sybil nodes with the honest nodes are very small. The third assumption is that the honest region, which is the region that contains mostly honest nodes, is fast mixing, and by that, if you take a look at the topology of this region, then it exhibits the property of a tightly knit community of users. Now, based on these three assumptions, most of these techniques, what they do is that they try to find the sparsest cut in the graph. They take a look at where the honest node is, and then label the region, the partition where the honest node is, as the honest region, the non-Sybil region, the non-fake region. As you can see, when you assume a different adversarial model, where, for example, assume an adversary that is able to mount a large-scale infiltration attack or infiltration campaign, which we showed as the case in a previous work, the situation is much different. First of all, the Sybils do not have to be clustered together. The second observation is that there will be far more attack edges than there are Sybils. And if you take a look at the theoretical bounds that the Sybil detection via social network algorithms guarantee, if the number of attack edges are larger than the number of Sybils, they will all basically not perform well. So again, using graph theory and graph theoretic algorithms to detect Sybils or social bots is also challenging in this sense. Now, the other approach is to prevent the social bots right from the beginning. And the observation here is that it's all about automation. If you can prevent an adversary from automating the operation of a social bot, then it is mostly, almost surely that this threat will not be a big concern. However, doing so is not an easy job. And in the following slides, I will show the challenges in preventing such automation. So I'm going to show us five vulnerabilities that collectively are needed to automate a social bot. And we need only to solve at least one. So the first one is that online social networks use ineffective captchas. As you all know, a CAPTCHA is supposed to be something that is hard for a machine to understand. And assuming that you have such a perfect CAPTCHA that any user can solve easily, but it is impossible for a machine to understand or solve, this perfect CAPTCHA or this perfect Turing test is still ineffective if humans are employed or tricked into solving them. And we call such a situation as illegitimate situation, and these users as illegitimate users. To give you an example of such illegitimate settings, you have the web is full of these CAPTCHA solving businesses where you get the CAPTCHA or the challenge from the website, you use an API, send it to such a business, they have a bunch of people sitting behind computers, they solve it, send you back the response, and you relay it back to the website. Easy job. Recent research shows that it is also cheap. You can buy 1,000, you know, CAPTCHAs that are successfully solved for about a dollar, less than a dollar. The second one, so here's just an example of a GUI they use there. Another example is a botnet such as Coopface that use social engineering to trick users into solving CAPTCHAs, because Coopface propagate or distributes its malware through social networks such as Facebook. And because there is automation, they're going to receive some CAPTCHAs and they have to solve them. And the way they do it, they collect these CAPTCHAs and then distribute these CAPTCHAs to infected machines where a user is, you get another Windows message box that's telling you, you know, write down these two words before the computer shuts down. And this is how it works. So the challenge here is, how would you design a reverse Turing test that is usable and effective even against illegitimate human solvers? And this boils down to detecting these illegitimate settings or preventing them in the first place. One example is to use social authentication, where you use the personal social knowledge in order to artificially make a challenge. For example, if someone uses my Facebook account and logs in from Russia, then Facebook detects that and then challenges that user with a set of pictures of a friend of mine, then asks the user to identify that person. However, recent work by Ross Anderson's team showed that a social authentication is not that easy. It's not that effective. And what they showed is that usually users try, you know, with privacy, with private data on, say, Facebook, usually you try to hide it from someone you know rather than someone you don't know at all. So they define an adversary who is someone you know, an insider threat, like a friend or a friend of friend, and then they identify a qualitative measure that tries to compute the probability of a successful guess of that, of the person in the picture. And what they found is that if the social authentication uses a single image, then there is a greater than 50% chance that you can guess the person in that picture on average. If you use five of those, the situation gets better. However, some people are still vulnerable to impersonation with 100% chance. For example, celebrities. The second vulnerability that OSN suffer from is the ability to create fake accounts or sybils. Now, why would an adversary create sybils? This leads to the sybil attack. Basically, the situation where an adversary creates or controls a large set of fake accounts in order to subvert a particular service. And the challenge here is that you want to guarantee an anonymous yet credible binding between these online and offline identities in open access systems that allow any user to join the system by providing or showing an identity. This could be an open ID identity. And the way you can deal with this is that you can either rely or trust a centralized authority to authenticate identities online. And there's been a proposal by the US government to implement what is called an open government initiative to allow US citizens to use third-party identities such as OpenID to log in to US government sites. However, that approach has its own problems. The second approach is that you can tie the identities to resources such as memory or CPU-intensive crypto puzzles. However, if you have an adversary that has a botnet, then this mechanism does not work. And finally, you can use something external to the system itself, like a structure, some kind of a structure between the identities, like a social graph. The third vulnerability is the ability of basically performing large-scale network crawls on the social graphs. And by that, I mean you can crawl a large portions of the social graph, including the associated social attributes, like pictures, public information, and so on. So the challenge here, how can you limit such civil crawls of online social networks without limiting the social experience itself? There has been proposals where, for example, let's borrow concepts from e-commerce. Let's use a credit network where every node in the network represents an identity. And then, for example here, an edge, directed edge between A and B represents how many credits P gives to A to perform a transaction. So say a node A wants to browse the profile of node D and say Facebook, then credit network, using a credit network, for this transaction to succeed, there should be a path from A to B that has sufficient credits to perform the operation, say one credit per edge, and on the way back. So using this concept, if you have a civil attacker or an adversary who controls a social bot network, as in this figure where you see civil nodes X, X1, X2, X3, four in total, and then you can propose a defense mechanism that assigns credits to edges, and assuming a small cut, edge cut, which is the previous same assumption, an adversary cannot establish a large number of attack edges, and assuming an optimal credit assignment oracle, say you can do this, then it is easy to limit civil crawls or transactions on a social graph by noticing that how many civils the adversary introduces, the attacker will be limited by the transactions on the edges at the cut. The fourth vulnerability is exploitable platforms, OSM platforms, and APIs. Today it is easy for an adversary basically to perform reverse engineering of OSM platforms such as Twitter or Facebook, or use the social APIs that are, they are designed to allow automation to perform or automate the operation of a bogus persona. Now you can first try to use social API. If the adversary wants to perform an operation that is not supported by the API, then the adversary can try to capture the exact HTTP request that is sent through the browser to perform such an operation. And something like HTTP request templates could be used in combination with the social API in order to automate whatever the social bot is supposed to do. For example, sending friendship requests. So you can see that this is a double-edged sword. And the challenge here is, how would you detect abusive and automated usage of these OSM platforms and their social APIs across the internet? You can, for example, try to see the regularities at which these requests are made and try to differentiate between a bot and a human based on these regularities. However, a social bot is designed in the sense that it is able to mimic a user. And finally, the last vulnerability is more onto the human side, where you have poorly designed privacy and security controls. For example, when you receive a friendship request on Facebook, there is no option for you to say, no, I don't want to befriend this person. And so this leads you to, you know, the challenge that we need to develop usable OS and security and privacy controls that help users make better decisions. And in the case of infiltration, this translates into, you know, understanding the factors that affect a user decision and then try to provide these cues at the GUI level in order to communicate the risk. So do the risk analysis, see what could be a threat, then try to communicate this threat in a manageable way to the user. So finally, to conclude, I just want to deliver these three messages that large-scale infiltration by automated personas is feasible, and it has serious privacy and security implications. The nature of social bots makes it difficult for OS and security defenses and the user or the users to detect them. And if you try to prevent them, then you have a set of socio-technical challenges that poses interesting research problems. And finally, we need to consider both the human and the technical side when you deal with such a socio-technical system as an OSN, or online social network. That's it. Thank you.
Nice talk. Can you go back to slide 36? So you just went one before the last.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if I recall correctly, and you might be part of this team, the UBC team was part of the social bots. They had that paper in ACSAC last year, the best paper award.
That's true.
That's right. So you were part of that team?
Yeah.
All right. So can you say a little bit more, two-part question about the reaction from the online social network that you deploy the social bot against, and what you learned from that experience and how it helped drive your third bullet down here?
Yeah, okay. Thank you for your question. So to answer the first, we followed the known practice. We got the our university ethics board approval. We notified Facebook beforehand, and then the online media caught up on the news, and you know, you're trying to fight misinformation there, and we ended up with misinformation where they started saying, you know, group of hackers steal 250 gigabytes of data and so on and so forth. So they were not happy about it, and they communicated this to us, and lesson learned is two pieces of advice. The first, that always consider ethics and read the end user license agreement. How this affected the third point, there are a set of results that I haven't shown, but they're in the ACSAC paper. It is both a human and a technical problem. Humans show a vulnerable attitude or social behavior that a technical system has to consider. So even if you have the most sophisticated social technical system, it's still vulnerable to attacks such as automated social engineering, social phishing, and so on. So the defense system has to consider the both sides.
So suppose you were at Facebook at that point. What would you do to defend mitigate the attacks?
So first, actually, we three of the site integrity team members of Facebook visited the university. We had a chat. They have enough information about what we did. They have logs, and they, after this went public, they basically blocked 80% of the accounts we used. And they identified a set of together, we identified a set of things, say technical issues that they will consider. Because of something I haven't discussed here, we use in a pilot study techniques like adversarial reverse engineering techniques to figure out how the classifier works, to try to figure out where the decision boundary is, and then play around it. So these kind of things can be prevented by adding some easy to do checks at the way you handle the HTTP requests. I'm also interested in the human aspect. My the Larcy lab do research in usable security as well. So I think I will collaborate with a colleague in understanding what the factors are that influence a user decisions into befriending a stranger. And they try to elevate these factors as cues at the GUI level.
I thought it was interesting how you showed the graphs about Twitter reflecting, sentiment through Twitter reflecting aspects of reality. And I want to know if we're seeing large-scale sentiment-based attacks to try to modify reality. And
that would be interesting. I don't think if you want to do this as part of a research project, that you should be careful, I guess. But we've seen, I guess, the next talk will be about how Twitter, automated Twitter accounts were being used to, make some misinformation during the Russian election last year, I guess. So you can see how such social bots can be used to conduct misinformation. I know of a project called Truthy, where they showed how Twitter bots were being used to spread misinformation, basically astroturf campaigns during the 2010 midterm elections in the U.S. So there are a set of documented events where this was happening, correlating that with, cause and effect. I think it's a difficult problem.
Thank you.
All right, let's thank Yazan one more time.
Can I ask one more question?
Just go on.
Okay. You briefly mentioned some simple fixes for HTTP requests that you discussed. Can you elaborate on that?
Simple fixes?
Yeah.
So we have now enough information to simulate the attack. And what we plan to do is to evaluate these simple defenses under the assumption of a social adversary that is able to create all of these attackages. And my hunch is that they will... they won't be as effective as they report in synthetic or real-life data sets, where they assume, say, 1,000 sybils with 100 attackages. It's easy to put these sybils in one partition, right?